Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, we certainly hope everyone had a delightful Valentine's Day, cold as it was, snowy as it was. And here we go again, right? Where is all the snow going to go? That's what I'd like to know. We're doing some business over at Rush Medical Center and one of the parking lots that they used to have. Now they use as a staging area for all the snow. And these aren't hills. These are mountains of snow. And when it starts to melt, I can't imagine where it's going to go. Well, go from a ski hill to a swimming pool. Mary Schmeek wrote a little poem honoring us in Chicago who have braved this weather. It's entitled, Chicago Winter Gives Us the Right to Shiver and Swagger. A little poem by Mary Schmeek. She writes, the friends from out in L.A. call. They purr, oh, aren't you freezing? Why, here it's sunny, bright and warm. No coughs, no itch, no sneezing. In Tucson, Scottsdale, Palm Springs, too, they think our weather's frightful. We're wearing sandals, shorts, and thongs. The desert sun's delightful. Miami pals pick up the phone. They chortle, we've been boating. The water's clear. The sky is blue. No, honest, we're not gloating. Are you okay? They phone to ask. Is everyone surviving? Oh, by the way, too bad you missed our great day scuba diving. The front page of the New York Times cries, Windy City freezes. As if in Brooklyn and the Bronx, it's all Fijian breezes. What's wrong with all these tepid fools? Yeah, Chicago's chilly. It's winter, guys. Chicago's cold, and duh, the Alps are hilly. We live for winters just like this. We love to moan and suffer, so all the wide, wimp world can see Chicagoans are tougher. Sub-zero winters heat our hearts. In our book, bitter's better. Who wants to live in places where you're warm in just a sweater? We want our Gore-Tex fur and down. We want to burr and shiver. We want to tell the world that they are softer than chopped liver. You citizens of lukewarm spots, you don't know what you're missing. Saliva freezes on our lips each time we're winter kissing. Our hair's a fly with static cling. We fatten like a turkey. Our thighs get raw from scratching. Our skin's just like beef jerky. And everywhere, the city streets are looking kind of squalid. Our cars are sporting coats of salt. The dog poops frozen solid. Our feet are ice. Our faces stone. Our noses always dripping. But even though we freeze outdoors, inside we're always stripping. We dress, undress, and dress again. Too hot, too cold, we mutter. These bleeping boots and gloves and muffs have turned my life to clutter. The air bites like a mangy dog. It claws worse than a kitten. We trail the dirt and slush inside. We've always lost one mitten. The gas tanks crack. The car doors stick. The water pipes are clogging. But even when it's 10 below, we're not afraid of jogging. Sometimes we dream of someplace warm. We're sipping cold martinis beneath a gently swaying palm and wearing French bikinis. But no, we're proud. We won't give in. We won't be weak and whiny. The winter fortifies our souls while freezing off our hiney. And if the lake's a glacier now and wind is like a dagger, well, folks, that's why we love this place. It gives us cause to swagger. Yes, friends, in all those balmy climes, we do not need your pity. Our winter's big as winter comes. Well, yours is itty-bitty. Mary Schmick, Chicago winter gives us right the shiver and swagger. Okay. Maybe we're getting to the end of shivering and swaggering, though, pretty soon. Of course, now that everything's melting, or at least temporarily, get these ice dams in the gutters and all the water's coming inside the house. Falls everywhere. But it'll dry out in August, right? Our good friend Samantha Blyden from Korshak, I want to mention about the Chicago Red Stars. The Chicago Red Stars of the National Women's Soccer League, the NWSL, announced open team tryouts for the 2014 season, which will be held on Thursday, February 27th, and Friday, February 28th, at the Max McCook Athletic and Exposition Center, 4750 South Vernon Avenue in McCook. The tryouts, to be held on turf, will include 2 days of tryouts. The first day, Thursday, February 27th, will consist of 2 tryout sessions. The second day, Friday, February 20th, will consist of 1 invitation-only tryout session. On Thursday, it'll be at 10 to 12, session 2 from 1:30 to 3 o'clock, and session 1 on Friday from 8 to 10. All college senior and post-collegiate players interested in participating must pay the first registration fee of $100. For information, contact Margot Baker at 773-697-8699. The Chicago Red Stars will return to their home stadium, the Village of Lyle Benedictine Sports Complex, which we were part of the group building, on April 26th to take on the Washington Spirit. The Chicago Red Stars, founded in 2007, are one of 9 professional clubs in the National Women's Soccer League. The team, led by Coach Rory Dames, boasts players from the U.S. and Canadian women's national teams, in addition to some of the top international players from around the world. The Red Stars enter their second NWSL season in 2014 and look to continue engaging and inspiring soccer fans both on and off the pitch. The Red Stars' home venue is Village of Lyle Benedictine Sports Complex, located in the western suburbs of Chicago in Lyle, Illinois. For more information on the Red Stars or to purchase tickets, please visit the club's official website at www.chicagoredstars.com. Great thing for the kids to see. The little ones, I just love the little ones in all their little shorts and outfits, 5 or 6 years old, running around and kicking the ball and having a lot of fun, because it goes into grammar school and goes into high school and, of course, into college, as you can see, into the professional leagues. I know my daughter played in grammar school and in high school, had a ball at it, and it's a lot of fun. Great exercise for the kids. You know, they don't necessarily have to have a goal or a purpose other than the running around and getting rid of some of that energy. And as a young age, that's a wonderful thing to do. They learn teamwork. And as we can see, as we're enjoying the Olympics, what it can turn out to be. So, again, if you want some information, give Margot Baker a call at 773-697-8699. The Chicago Red Stars, their 2014 season, the sports complex at Illinois Benedictine University out in Iowa. Beautiful, beautiful place, and easy to get to. And we were part of building it, so it was a wonderful place. Got this from our good friend Pam Rose from Swirls. Swirls Cupcake Madness. They've created 999 delicious flavors since opening 8 years ago. And now they're looking for the special 1,000th flavor. So we're asking our favorite people, Swirls customers, to dream up the ultimate, most delicious, mind-blowingly awesome cupcake. Josh is already taking notes on this. We want you to wow us. Here's how it works. Tuesday, February 18th through Friday, February 28th, submit your dream cupcake creation either in-store or via our Facebook or Twitter page. Now, the following components must include cake flavor, buttercream flavor, accent frosting, and topping. And optional are the crust, the schmear, and the filling. Monday, March 3rd, we'll announce all of the cupcake flavor submissions, and the 1,000th flavor cupcake competition will begin. Now, each Monday in March, you vote for your favorite cupcake flavors to advance them to the next round. And again, voting will take place in the store or the Facebook Twitter pages. On Friday, April 4th, the winning cupcake is announced. The winning cupcake will debut on Sunday, April 6th. And yes, you read that right. Sunday, April 6th. Starting that date, Swirls will be open from 12 to 5 on Sundays. And will be placed on the spring menu that starts April 7th. The creator of the winning cupcake will receive one dozen of his or her cupcake flavor creation to share, or not to share, with friends and family. And the winning cupcake, very interestingly enough, will be made in a gluten-free and a vegan gluten-free version as well, if possible. So that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm thinking about that right now. Josh is thinking about that right now. He's thinking about eating the cupcakes with you. Swirls Cupcakes, of course, are the best cupcakes in the world because cupcakes make people happy. And go on to their website, which is swirlscupcakes.com, and see if you can enter something. Come up with something interesting. You know, Pam Rose is such a good friend, and she has come up with some terrific stuff. The 1,000th will be very special. So that's a few things. We had the opportunity of seeing Judy Collins in concert at the City Winery right on Randolph the other evening. And what a delightful lady, a delightful performer, and one of the icons in the folk music world. And we hit her on our show and chatted with her a week or so ago. And we went backstage afterwards and talked with her, and she was very appreciative of being on the show and having the nice conversation we did. But some of the great songs, and we'd like to play them because the last time she was on, we had such a delightful time chatting with her, we didn't get a chance to play them. But her classic, of course, starting out, Both Sides Now, and Suzanne, which was written by Leonard Cohen. Both Sides Now was written by Joni Mitchell. Someday Soon, Who Knows Where the Time Goes, from the movie The Subject with Roses. And she did classic Broadway, and she did some Lennon McCartney song. So we'd like to get to a few of those today if we could. I'd like to start out again with her first classic, Both Sides Now, and we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Bows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds illusion. I really don't know clouds at all. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way you feel when every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, but just another show. You leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I look at love from both sides now, from green and blue, and feel somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know. They say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all.
written by Joni Mitchell, sung by the inimitable Judy Collins. The classic, Both Sides Now. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. William Shakespeare was the most remarkable storyteller that the world has ever known. Homer told of adventure and men at war. Sophocles and Tolstoy told of tragedies and of people in trouble. Terence and Mark Twain told comic stories. Dickens told melodramatic ones. Plutarch told histories. And Hans Christian Andersen told fairy tales. But Shakespeare told every kind of story. Comedy, tragedy, history, melodrama, adventure, love stories, and fairy tales. And each of them so well that they have become immortal. In all the world of storytelling, his is the greatest name. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago presents William Shakespeare's comedy, The Two Gentlemen of Verona, will be performed as a theatrical reading at four locations on Friday, February 21st. An evening performance will be given at the Niles Public Library at 7 o'clock. Pre-registration is required for this performance by calling the Niles Public Library at 847-663-1234. On Saturday, February 22nd, a morning performance begins at 10 at the Newberry Library, 60 West Walton in Chicago. An afternoon performance will be given at 2 o'clock at the Wilmette Public Library, 1242 Wilmette Avenue in Wilmette. On Sunday, February 23rd, the performance will be offered at 2 o'clock at the Highland Park Public Library, 494 Laurel Avenue in Highland Park. An introductory prologue to the play will be given 15 minutes prior to each performance, and a discussion with the actors, creative team, and audience members will follow the reading. Friendship and young love are put to the test in the Bard's boisterous comedy. Fun for all ages, the story ends well for our titular gentlemen, but not before outlaws, romantic rivals, foolish servants, and their own inconstancy send them on a series of misadventures. Jeff Christian, known for his rollicking production of The Comedy of Errors, Twelfth Night, and The Taming of the Shrew, will be the master of mayhem, directing an all-equity cast including Sarah Chiripar, Will Klinger, Nick Harrison, Matt Kaler, James Cragg, Kate Locanti, Mary Ringstead, Dan Rodden, Chris Rowe, Tiffany Scott, Stephen Spencer, Frederick Stone, and Daniel Patrick Sullivan. And on the line with us right now are two gentlemen, Peter Guarino, who is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, having been seen on the stages of the Steppenwolf Theater, Oak Park Festival Theater, and Pegasus Players. He's a writer, playwright, teacher, mentor, one of the brightest stars in the world of contemporary Shakespearean theater, and the artistic director and founding member of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. And Mr. Will Klinger, accomplished Chicago actor, having been on the stages of Northlight, Chicago Dramatists, Collaboration, Red Orchid, and Chicago Shakespeare Theaters. Emmy Award-winning host of WTTW's long-running hit television show Wild Chicago. Producer, writer, news correspondent, ambivalent Stratfordian, one of the stars of The Two Gentlemen of Verona, now presenting William Shakespeare's The Two Gentlemen of Verona, February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, all around Chicagoland. Peter and Will, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin, thank you. It's great to be back with you.
It's great always to have you, and we have Will with us today, too, Peter. And but what a great choice, The Two Gentlemen of Verona, one of, I guess, arguably Shakespeare's maybe early plays, if not his first play, to be presented by the Chicago Shakespeare Project of Chicago.
That's right. It's one of our, traditionally in February, we do a comedy each year, and Jeff Christian has done this now for the last several years for us. He's directed one of these plays, and last year we did Twelfth Night, and Will was in that play as well, did a fantastic job as Malvolio, and then went on to play the same role at the Oak Park Festival last summer. So
that's true, but I didn't get to use a script there, and I didn't get to hold my script.
And you didn't get to have a dog either.
No dog.
That's right.
Now, of course, Will plays Launce in The Two Gentlemen of Verona, and kind of the comic foil, one of the memorable characters in the play.
The serving man of Proteus, and certainly, yes, referred to in the character description as a clown. So, yeah, he's one of Shakespeare's clowns, and I enjoy playing clowns and fools. I'm not humble.
You wear the mantle well, Will.
Yeah.
We'll just finish playing a servant, or actually a bartender, waiter-type role in The Fair Maid of the West for us. And actually, as I look back at Will's resume with the Shakespeare Project, he has a history of playing these servant roles, but extremely well. What What do you attribute that to, Will?
It's funny because I've never worked as a waiter in my life. I'm sure I would be the worst waiter in Christendom because I'd probably drop plates and screw up orders. But I guess I love to play them in my imagination.
A comical waiter. You're too thin to play Falstaff, so you have to play.
Yeah. I'm going to have to put on about 200 pounds for that role.
Now, Peter, why choose The Two Gentlemen of Verona other than the fact that it's a romantic comedy? Was it one of his first play or was it one of his earlier plays?
Comedy of Errors would have been, I believe, his first play.
Okay.
It would have been one of his early comedies set in Italy. We go through this Shakespeare cycle. This is our 19th season, so we actually look and see how long it's been since we've done a play, and it's generally about 10 years.
Okay.
Between the times that we'll do these do the plays over again, so it was on the one hand it was time to do Two Gentlemen, and it seemed to fit very well in the season that we put together.
Interesting themes of this play: loyalty and passion, loyalty to friendship between Valentine and Proteus, and submission to the passion, both of which they have, one for Sylvia or two for Sylvia, and one for, of course, Julia. Love and friendship, the foolishness of lover, inconstancy, as I mentioned in our introduction. So a lot of things that go on there, ideas and feelings to get across to the audience.
Very much so. It's one of his plays that focuses, again, on young love and also on this idea of constancy and being faithful to your girlfriend, in the case of Proteus and Julia. But that's what Shakespeare does so well. Is he takes a theme like love, and he shows it in many, many different ways, and through the journey of the characters presents an enlightening experience for all of us, hopefully.
Kind of interesting the way he chose the names for the Two Gentlemen of Verona. Valentine, of course, very evident because he was romantic, he was a lover, but Proteus is from Greek or Roman mythology, which is a shape-changing god. And it's kind of reflective of who Proteus was because he was always inconstant to who he was attracted to.
Well, he starts out just totally gobsmacked by Julia, and he takes one look at Sylvia, and he drops Julia like a bad habit. I mean, it's the mercurial nature of his feelings certainly come to the fore there.
The same thing happens to Romeo, actually, in Romeo and Juliet. Romeo is,
as
Will says, gobsmacked with Rosaline, and as soon as Benvolio takes him to the Capulet's ball and he, you know, sees Juliet, he's head over heels and in love with her and completely forgets about the old girlfriend.
Interesting, on this early play, you see how Shakespeare evolved in some of his later plays. You mentioned Romeo and Juliet, just the relationships that were there also. You know, there was a lot of, especially in the forest scene, wasn't that reminiscent of Midsummer Night's Dream? You thought about that a little bit when you're doing the forest scenes?
In this play with the outlaws, is that in Two Gentlemen?
Right.
Right. Well, you have Sylvia's going out in search of Valentine after he's been banished from Milan, and you have some things going on out in the forest, and in this case the outlaws come and basically, you know, take hold of her. So the forest there is a kind of netherworld aspect to it, very much very similar in some ways to Midsummer.
Now, Will,
there's a little Robin Hood in there too, because they make Valentine their leader. They sort of, you know, take him and make them their top guy in a way.
Now, Will, you've worn a lot of different hats and certainly have been participatory and an integral part of the success of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. Do you enjoy the aspect of reading the script of Shakespeare as compared to acting it, as you have done in Chicago Shakespeare Theaters?
Yeah, I mean, it's great because it allows you to, you can get away with a lot less time, obviously. There's a lot, we have very little, only three rehearsals and four performances, so there's the time element. But also, I've had people come up to me and say they actually enjoy Shakespeare Project productions more than fully blown Shakespeare productions, because without the distraction of costumes and big sets and you know, a lot of intricate blocking, you really concentrate on the words, and the words become paramount. And I enjoy just working with great actors, great equity actors, and doing all these great plays. I've done 14 of these now.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine you'll see some of the audience, and Peter, you can speak to this better than anyone, where the audience is just concentrating on those words so much their eyes are closed because it's really not a set to look at, but they are absorbing the beauty of the Elizabethan language as much as you can get the cadence of it or the rhythm to it.
Well, that's true. In some cases, we even find audience members bring their text and follow along.
Okay.
But, you know, the point is that these actors, they're acting, right? They're acting book in hand. And to that extent, our audiences always tell us that after a few minutes, they don't even see the books because what the actors are doing, you know, we have a fully staged production or staged reading, and the books become completely transparent because, as Will said, the audience is really tuned in to the language and also the great performances that the actors are bringing forward.
Funny you say that. As you say that, I'm reminded of the musical, remember Avenue, was it Avenue M, where they had the puppets
Avenue
on?
Avenue Q.
Avenue Q.
Right.
My letters are wrong. But with the puppets on stage, but after a while, you never paid attention to the people behind the puppets. You were just looking at the puppets doing what they were doing. So your mind focuses on what's absolutely happening on a stage. In your case, of course, the words that are being read and said and so forth, and enjoying that in itself.
Right. We'd really be in trouble if people were only focusing on our script.
The other thing about our performance, though, that Kevin, we talked about before, is that our audiences are very, very relaxed at our performances. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that before we do the play, we have our dramaturge do an introduction to the play.
That's so very important. I love that.
So immediately they're put at ease and they get some historical background. They get some background about Shakespeare and where he was in his career when he wrote this. They get something about what was happening in contemporary Elizabethan England at the time. Then they see they experience the play, and then afterwards the actors stick around and have a Q&A with the audience, so that there's a whole kind of, you know, circular experience there from the beginning right through the play and then the talk back, so that people really feel very comfortable being a part of this. And it's very, very different than going, like Will said, to a full production where sometimes it's a lot more about, you know, being seen and saying, well, I want to see this show or whatever.
And isn't that the essence of theater itself, Peter, that you stimulate and engage the audience's creativity and stimulate and engage an audience's imagination and their intellect such that they absorb everything that's going on and makes them want to leave the theater and learn more about it?
Absolutely. And that's one of the great things that you see in Shakespeare's writing, especially with his presentation style of certain things like a soliloquy or an aside where you have direct address to the audience. It's very much about the group experience. So, absolutely.
Well, what character in Shakespeare have you not yet played and would like to?
Ooh. Iago.
Mm, okay.
I'd love to play Iago. I did a monologue from him. I was studying in my junior year in London, and I got to do a monologue of Iago's for a class, and ever since I've... So there you go, Peter. Next time you direct Othello, you're going to cast me as Iago, right? I mean, that's the least you could do after this interview.
Without the dog.
You're probably going to have to wait about 9 years.
Oh, you just did it. Oh, okay.
Well, I tried here. Well, I don't know what else I can do for you.
I'll keep that in mind.
All right.
What's interesting, too, now, you're going to be performing at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival this year, and that's back to your alma mater, isn't it, Peter?
That's correct. We're very excited about this. It's the second year that we've been invited to go to the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, and we'll be bringing our April play, which is All's Well That Ends Well, to the festival. And it's very exciting for us to be able to do that. Kevin Rich, who is the artistic director of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, will again be working with us on All's Well, playing Parolas. So we're very excited about that. We've had a number of our actors work at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. I worked at this summer, Fred Stone, who's one of our actors, will be going and working down there as well. So it's a great relationship that we have started, and we're very excited about it.
Congratulations. I think that'll be a great thing to continue. And, of course, the music of Shakespeare in collaboration with the Lakeview Orchestra, that's another thing very exciting. Of course, a couple, was it last year, the year before you did the music, some music from Shakespeare?
Well, we do My Name is Will, which is the show that we do, which is a compilation of Shakespeare's sonnets.
Right.
But this is something different. The Lakeview Orchestra invited us to collaborate with them on an evening called The Music of Shakespeare. And they are presenting the fantasy overture from Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet and also the overture from Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream. So we are going to be presenting scenes from both of those plays as part of that evening. So we're very much looking forward to that. That's coming up on May 6th. And, again, people can go to the Lakeview Orchestra website to get more information about that.
And, of course, Romeo and Juliet is being performed by the Joffrey Ballet coming up in the spring for their engagement.
Yes, and we are in process of going out next month with our 50-minute Romeo and Juliet, which we were taking to some local schools. And this is the third year that we're doing that show. So part of our education outreach program, we also continue to do performances of our 50-minute Hamlet. So those two shows are being featured very much this year, and they're fantastic shows that we love to bring to students and actually people of all ages.
Is that grammar schools or high schools?
We do universities, middle schools, and high schools.
Okay.
And we actually did 50-minute Hamlet this past summer for a summer camp of fourth and fifth graders. So it's we're constantly amazed at how early students are being introduced to Shakespeare. And we think it's great because typically, at least I didn't get it until I went to high school. So the kids that are getting it now, and either in elementary or middle school, are getting a good foundation early on that you know, they can build on for a lifetime.
I'll be doing a three-hour Hamlet this summer here. So we're adding two and a half hours.
Where are you doing that, Will? I didn't know that.
I'm doing it at the Oak Park Festival. I did Twelfth Night last summer. I'm doing three roles in that: the ghost of Hamlet's father, the player king, and the gravedigger. Three
fantastic
choice roles.
Well, we love to plug the Oak Park festivals. They're a great bunch, and as Will said, he was out there last summer. I worked there many years ago as well, and they do great stuff. So I'll look forward to seeing that.
And I think that's the essence of what we need to do as parents or teachers or grandparents, to expose the kids to the classics like this. And if we get them familiar and comfortable with it, like you do in your presentations, Peter and Will, in that you have a conversation before the play, explaining a little bit about it, explaining a little bit about Shakespeare's times, Elizabethan England, and so forth, and have a question and answer afterwards, makes them feel more comfortable. Again, they walk out of the theater and they feel this is something special. I think when people go to the theater, you feel good about yourself because you feel like intellectually you're stimulated and accomplished something by doing that.
Well, that's exactly what our approach is with teachers. We try, when we work with them around 50-minute Romeo and Juliet or 50-minute Hamlet, we'll suggest that please have them see us first before you do anything in terms of giving them a script to read. People forget that Shakespeare was meant to be performed. It was not meant to be read. And very frequently, you know, especially young students can get stuck looking at a script with words that are very, very old and difficult. So if we can open them up to the performance experience first and they see how exciting it is, then when they go back to look at the play and read it in class or whatever, it makes a lot more sense to them. So that's our whole education goal, is to make students' first experience with Shakespeare a positive experience.
Now, Will, I have to ask you a personal question here.
Yeah.
And I want you to be truthful, not the fact that your fearless leader is there notwithstanding. Are you a Stratfordian or an Oxfordian?
I'm actually, strangely, I'm a Rastafarian, which is...
I can see by your hair.
No, I'm actually a Stratfordian. You called me an ambivalent Stratfordian, but there's no ambivalence.
I did that for Peter, actually.
And, you know, my name is Will too, so I gotta go with
You know, I know it's a compelling movie, and I've been telling Peter about that. Anonymous, it's you know, the Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford, kind of interesting. And now when I read The Two Gentlemen of Verona and I look at Shakespeare picking the names Valentine and Proteus, how would he know Proteus was a shape-changing god in Greek or Roman mythology? You know, I don't know. You know,
we don't know an awful lot about his formal education, but again, I think that he would have had some exposure to some of the classics that would have allowed him to draw on some of those references.
We have the opportunity, I mentioned this to Peter, best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author, Steve Barry, who is a regular on our show every time he comes up with a new bestseller he's on. The last one he wrote was called The King's Deception, and it has a whole different spin on Elizabeth and Elizabethan England. It's worthwhile. It puts forth the premise that you think about and go, wow, that's kind of interesting.
I got to get that book for my mother, because that's how I became interested in Shakespeare. In fact, my parents were, back in Warren, Pennsylvania, were members of this club called the Shakespeare Club.
Really?
And they would get together with their friends and neighbors of the club every month, and they'd read a different, and it was a social occasion, but that's how I got interested. And my mother really sort of passed that on to me. I'll have to get her that book. What's it called again?
The King's Deception by Steve Barry, and it sets the kind of the Elizabethan idea on its ear. But it's, it talks about the Cecils, of course, at the time. They were the assistants to the Elizabeth and so forth, and all the court intrigue that was going on, and of course, with Shakespeare and Christopher Marlowe being involved in it and so forth. And it's kind of interesting, but it's certainly different.
That might be a birthday.
Certainly different. 20th anniversary of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago coming up next year. Congratulations, Peter, and have some special things planned?
Well, we do. It's our 20th anniversary season, and we will be announcing the season in April. So right now we're still working. I'm working with Barbara Zahora, who's my Associate Artistic Director, on putting the plays together. I can say this, it's going to be a special season. There will be one predominant theme in the season, and we're very much looking forward to it. Again, it's our 20th anniversary season, and we're really only around because we have such a great group of donors and people who believe in the Shakespeare Project that give us some financial support. And obviously, we wouldn't be around if we didn't have great actors like Will Klinger and some of all the other
people that
work with us.
Who would like to play Iago. And anything we can do to get the word out, Peter, we're always happy to do that. Look forward to that. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago was created to achieve three main goals: to bring to life the worlds of William Shakespeare and the world's other great dramatists, to foster the talents of members of Actors Equity Association, the professional union of actors and stage managers, to present the plays to members of our community for free. Our mission today includes educational outreach programs to augment Shakespeare studies for middle school, high school, and university students, with our approach driven by a simple goal: make the student's first experience with Shakespeare a positive one. The Two Gentlemen of Verona by William Shakespeare. The Shakespeare Project of Chicago presents The Two Gentlemen of Verona at the Niles Public Library Friday, February 21st at 7 o'clock. Saturday, February 22nd, 10 a.m. at the Newberry Library in Chicago. Saturday, February 22nd at 2 o'clock at the Wilmette Public Library. And Sunday, February 23rd at the Highland Park Public Library at 2. And on the line with us right now is the artistic director and founding member of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, Peter Guarino, and one of his stars, Will Klinger. Peter, maybe a phone number, website, if people like to get some information?
Sure. Our website is www.shakespeareprojectchicago.com. And our phone number is 773-710-2718.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and it was certainly a pleasure to have Will on. We miss you on the TV, Will.
Well, all the more reason to come to see Shakespeare Project, because I'm even better in the flesh.
There you go. Peter, Will, I appreciate your time, and certainly always a pleasure, and look forward to talking with you soon.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Will.
All right. Bye.
Peter Guarino, the artistic director and founding member of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, and Will Klinger. Of course, we know him from WTTW's long-running hit television show Wild Chicago, which he won an Emmy. And if you have the opportunity, at one of the venues, always do a terrific job. The Two Gentlemen of Verona, William Shakespeare's one of his earlier plays. For information, 773-710-2718. Concern Worldwide, the international humanitarian organization, will honor Marie Tillman, president and co-founder of the Pat Tillman Foundation, with the 2014 Leadership Award, and Susan Walsh, founder and president of Little by Little, with the 2014 Humanitarian Award, for their outstanding humanitarian and philanthropic leadership at its Women of Concern Awards luncheon in Chicago on Friday, February 28th, with a reception at 11 o'clock and luncheon and awards program at 12 at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Wacker Drive. Marie Tillman and Susan Walsh are not only pioneers in their respective fields, they are inspirational for both positive change, said Joseph Callan of Concern Worldwide. Their compassion and commitment to bringing equal access to health care and helping veterans and active service members fulfill their academic dreams have undoubtedly touched and transformed the lives of thousands of people. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning businesswoman who has been an integral part of the Children's Memorial Foundation, Catholic Extension, and the Midwest Stock Exchange, member of the Leadership Council of both Chicago Cares and the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and now is the Regional Director of Concern Worldwide, presenting the 16th Annual Women of Concern Awards Luncheon, Friday, February 28th, beginning at 11, at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Wacker Drive, Ms. Mary Ellen Johnson. Mary Ellen, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, hi, Kevin. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you.
Introduction.
Well,
thank
I hope you.
You
liked it. It's a pleasure to have you, a pleasure to speak with somebody so engaged in philanthropic pursuits. And tell us a little bit about Concern Worldwide.
Oh, sure. Concern Worldwide, it's a non-governmental international humanitarian organization. And our mission really is to reduce the suffering and work to eliminate extreme poverty. So we have approximately 3,000 highly skilled workers that are, they have an on-the-ground presence in 26 of the world's poorest countries. And many of these countries are located in sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and in the Caribbean. But what I really enjoy about the work is that we work in five sector areas. So we're responding to emergencies. We're focused in on health, education, livelihoods, and HIV and AIDS programs. But all of them revolve around reducing absolute poverty.
And you've traveled to a lot of these places, like Ethiopia, Sierra Leone, Haiti. That's a long way from Chicago, kiddo.
It is. It really broadens. It just makes your eyes open to what people in the developing world have to struggle with. Most of them are extraordinarily happy. They're very proud of what they have, but they're dealing with so little. But Concern has been in existence for about the past 45 years. Really, it's slow work, but it's there to teach people skills, to bring sustainability to communities. We work in partnership. We also hire people from the country. But, again, we have a very strong track record on the ground.
Of course, this is part of your DNA. As we talked yesterday, we've both been educated by the Jesuits, and service to others is something that is ingrained in us, and you're living that. I think there's an old saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give, and you're certainly reflective of that, Mary Ellen.
Oh, well, thank you. But, you know, it's really our donors, our corporate sponsors, foundations that support us. Those are really the people that make our work possible. The luncheon that you described, it really shines a light on women in the developing countries. Concern knows how important it is for women to have a voice and to provide them with education and health. By doing that, we at least get them on the road to recovery. In many of the countries that Concern works in, so many of them are women and children. So many of the millions of refugees, I think in the world we have about 876 million illiterates. Two-thirds of those people are women. So many of the women are doing the work, yet they don't own the land. And then every day about 1,400 women die in pregnancy and childbirth. So these are all, you know, large numbers we're talking about, but if we can make a difference in these communities, then we feel we've accomplished quite a bit.
Interestingly enough, Concern Worldwide was founded back in Ireland in the 60s, 1968, and to aid famine victims in Biafra, headquartered in Dublin, of course. But, you know, I had on my show last week Judy Collins, of course, the great singer.
Sure, yes.
And with Pete Seeger, they were the people that sang about this, what was going on, to try to get the word out about what was happening around the world.
That's so interesting. You're absolutely right. We were founded in 1968 by two Irish missionary priests. And if you think back to the 1960s, it really were the priests and the nuns that were in these communities in Africa. They might be compared to today's humanitarian workers, but they were really making life and death decisions of who would receive the food. They were trying to get trucks and flights dropping off supplies. And Ireland was a phenomenal supporter of our work. The famine actually resonated with them going back to the 1800s when Ireland was so affected, and that's why Ireland was sending ships over to Africa in 1968 to help the priests.
You're too young to remember the 60s, Muriel.
Well, I was a young child, so I'm not exactly spring chicken, but yes.
Now, of course, you're honoring Marie Tillman and Susan Walsh. Marie Tillman, the wife of the great Pat Tillman, a great athlete, and was killed in the Army and so forth. And Susan Walsh, founder and president of Little by Little. Tell us a little bit about those honorees.
Oh, sure. Well, we go through a selection process, and with Marie Tillman, we really felt that she exemplified the leadership award. She provides leadership. She goes out and selects the Tillman Military Scholars Program. So she's working with the next generation of leaders. She's focused in on the veterans, active service members, and their spouses to fill their academic dreams. So to date, it's impressive, 290 Tillman Military Scholars. They represent 34 states, and they attend 92 academic institutions. The Pat Tillman Foundation has awarded more than $4.1 million in scholarship support.
Wow.
And it's just such, it's fantastic what she's doing with the veterans. So we really felt that, you know, quietly she's making a huge impact.
And Susan Walsh, is she a South Sider?
No, she's actually from Glenview, so She resides in the north suburbs. She's been a pediatric nurse for more than 30 years, and she's a professor in the graduate nursing program at University of Illinois at Chicago. But since 2006, she and her husband, they set up Little by Little. It's an organization to improve the health and well-being in a small village in Haiti called Gramaf. What they're doing is providing basic health care, especially to mothers and children. But she organizes about 4 medical mission trips per year. She goes down to Haiti with about 20 or 25 medical professionals and also volunteers. They bring down suitcases of medical supplies, and she just makes a tremendous impact in this community. She was also caught in 2010 when the earthquake hit. She was there and was providing immediate emergency care to the people in Port-au-Prince.
Are things still as bad in Haiti as they have been over the last few years?
I think there are still challenges, and it has to do more with probably the titles of the buildings in Port-au-Prince, where it's been difficult still to remove rubble.
Mm-hmm.
But I think great strides are being made. It's difficult because the government might not be as strong as we would like to see, but other departments, and I would also say there are other NGOs and corporations that are, have really been making a great effort. If we look at the Clinton Global Initiative, they're making strong partnerships. They're leaders on the ground. CERN has a wonderful track record as well. We're doing quite a bit with water and sanitation, education. But it's a much slower process than I think people are used to when we sit here in the U.S.
It must be difficult, Mary Ellen, to choose honorees because of all the great people that are doing great work in and around the Chicagoland area.
Well, we really look for women who are maybe operating under the radar screen,
mm-hmm.
But yet they are making such an impact. I think Marie and Sue really exemplify this, but their work, it's just like throwing a pebble in a pond. Their impact is really spreading. But we've been honoring women for the past 16 years. We have honored very interesting women, Catherine Bertini, who used to work for the World Food Program, Samantha Power, who now works, she's the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Peggy Roach, who was here at DePaul University doing great work. There's all sorts of women who come from different fields, but I think our guests are always, they walk away very inspired.
What can we do, Mary Ellen, as the common people or common folk or people who would like to participate or help out in any way? How do we do that?
Sure. Well, I'd invite your guests, if you are available, please join us on Friday, February 28th. The luncheon will be held at the Hyatt Regency Chicago from 11 o'clock reception, 12 o'clock luncheon. But they can purchase tickets online at concernusa.org, or they can call our office, 312-431-8400. But I do feel that it's a wonderful afternoon. We really celebrate women and children in the developing world. I also want your listeners to know that Felicia Middlebrooks will be our MC, and then we are we've invited one of our country directors from Sierra Leone to join us to talk about her work. She spent the past 5 years in Afghanistan. And now she's been assigned to Sierra Leone, but she really has a depth of knowledge of working in challenging situations.
Well, anything we can do to get the word out, we're happy to do that. And I certainly think that Noreen Heron will keep us informed. But let us know if we can help out in any other way.
Oh, Kevin, this opportunity has been great. So thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Concern Worldwide is a non-governmental international humanitarian organization committed to the relief, assistance, and advancement of the most vulnerable people in underdeveloped countries of the world. CERN works in the areas of emergency response, education, livelihoods, health, and HIV and AIDS in 26 of the world's poorest countries across Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and the Caribbean, and has saved countless lives, relieved suffering, and provided opportunities for a better standard of living for millions of people. CERN Worldwide U.S., the international humanitarian organization, will honor Marie Tillman, president and co-founder of the Pat Tillman Foundation, with the 2014 Leadership Award, and Susan Walsh, founder and president of Little by Little, with the 2014 Humanitarian Award, for their outstanding humanitarian and philanthropic leadership at its Women of CERN Awards luncheon in Chicago on Friday, February 28th, with a reception at 11 and luncheon and awards program at 12 at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Wacker Drive. And on the line with us right now is the director of Women of CERN Awards Luncheon, 16th Annual, our good friend Mary Ellen Johnson. Mary Ellen, maybe a phone number, website, if you can, one more time.
Oh, sure. Our office number is 312-431-8400, and our website is concernusa.org.
Well, kiddo, it's a pleasure chatting with you, and if we can do anything else, please keep us on the radar and let us know.
Great. Well, thank you again.
And good luck on the luncheon, Mary Ellen.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Thanks, Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen Johnson, who is the Regional Director of Concern Worldwide, presenting the 16th Annual Women of Concern Awards Luncheon, Friday, February 28th, beginning at 11 at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Wacker Drive. For information, 312-431-8400. Always enjoyable to chat with somebody who's so dedicated. As I said before, Mary Ellen's certainly a lady who exemplifies that saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Peter Guarino, the artistic director and founding member of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, and Will Klinger, of course, the Emmy Award-winning host of WTTW's long-running hit television show Wild Chicago, who are both presenting William Shakespeare's The Two Gentlemen of Verona, February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, all around Chicagoland. And for information, 773-710-2718. And it was delightful to chat with Mary Ellen Johnson, who is the Regional Director of Concern Worldwide, as she now presents the 16th Annual Women of Concern Awards Luncheon, Friday, February 28th, beginning at 11, at the Hyatt Regency Chicago, 151 East Wacker Drive. We appreciate Catherine Nichols from Heron PR making us aware of that, because always good to get the word out about some very, very worthy causes. For information about Concern Worldwide and the luncheon, call 312-431-8400. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music.